Hello, and thank you for listening to this Exploring ASD podcast with the Northern Trust. I'm James Nelson. I'm a psychiatrist in the Trust, and I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague Gillian today. Hello, Gillian.
Hello.
For those listening, do you want to introduce yourself and maybe say a little bit about your role?
Yeah, so my name's Gillian, and I am one of the senior ASD therapists within the Paediatric ASD Service, and my professional background is that of a speech and language therapist.
Excellent. And the title of our podcast today is Why Does My Child Go From 0 to 100 and What Can I Do About It? And I'm imagining that parents listening to this will already be able to relate to that. And I'm wondering, Gillian, in your experience in the autism team, do you tend to see this as quite a common problem for families, that emotions can go from 0 to 100?
Absolutely. We definitely find that one of the most common reasons that parents and carers are reaching out to us for support and advice from our service is because of concerns regarding their child or young person's management of emotions. Especially in this current climate, we are getting calls to our telephone consultation service on a daily basis from families concerned about how their young person's coping with their anxiety, managing their anger, managing their emotions in general in the face of so much uncertainty at the moment and change during this COVID-19 outbreak. But even before this time period, emotional regulation difficulties has been one of the most frequent reasons that we are involved with and hear from families. And I mean, more broadly speaking, it is accepted that people with ASD can be more likely to experience difficulties in their emotional development than their neurotypical peers, and that this contributes to the research that we see that shows that people with ASD are also more likely to experience mental health needs of some kind or another at some point in their lives.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, parents engaged with services might hear the term emotional dysregulation used. And I wonder, do you want to just mention what do we mean by emotional dysregulation, and what does that actually look like in the real world?
Yeah, I mean, we all experience fluctuations in our emotional state and general mood every day, throughout the day. That's the symptom of being alive. But for our young people with ASD, when we're talking about emotional dysregulation as something of a potential concern, this may look like a young person who's experiencing very frequent extreme reactions or intense emotions, emotional responses that often seem out of control. Perhaps they're disproportionate to the situation, or if there are frequent fluctuations in emotional state that are having an effect on daily functioning and general well-being. Basically, when emotions are becoming a problem and they're not well managed day to day, and this can present itself differently for each young person. It can also differ for each individual depending on the situation they find themselves in. So they may have very big, very obvious emotional reactions such as crying, shouting, lashing out. And that might be saying and doing things that they shouldn't and they don't mean. And that's what people typically think of when they think of someone who's emotionally dysregulated. But for some young people, it can also look like a total shutdown and withdrawing away into themselves, running away, shutting themselves away and opting out completely.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm imagining that families listening to this would relate to all of that and would probably even be able to describe in better detail to us from their own experiences what those emotional states can look like for their young person. I suppose a key question in here, Gillian, is why does this happen? What would be some of the reasons why a child on the autism spectrum goes from 0 to 100?
We can all identify particular stressors that can set us off, cause us to lose our cool and cause times of worry or agitation for us. And that's life, and life happens, and that's the same and true for our young people on the spectrum. But we also know that young people with ASD can have a lot more to cope with or experience stressors and difficulties that are different or additional to the typical stressors of life and that are inherent to their diagnosis. By virtue of their diagnosis, people with ASD can be very rigid in their thoughts, behaviours, expectations, and so naturally when things in life don't go as they want or expect, this can cause significant distress, and that would be more so than their typical neurotypical peers. They can also experience difficulties accepting change and managing transitions, and this can include small transitions throughout the day, so between activities, as well as those bigger transitions that we all go through, you know, such as change of school. Managing uncertainty and unpredictability, either in daily life or in routines or even the behaviour of others can also result in anxiety for our young people. So I suppose considering, you know, for listeners at home, if a young person has ever had an adverse reaction or at the least experienced anxiety in anticipating going somewhere new, and even if that's something you know they would enjoy. Communication and social skills difficulties are also inherent to a diagnosis of ASD, and therefore social pressures and social demands can have a big impact on a young person's emotional well-being. So knowing what to say, how to manage conversations, keep up with peers, etc., that can be challenging for any young person, and more so for our young people with ASD who may struggle more with these skills in a social setting. Sensory processing needs can impact on emotional regulation too. So for those young people who have difficulty managing and regulating that the sensory input in their environment and who are prone to experiencing times of sensory overload, they will often be more anxious and stressed as a result. And some of those common sensory triggers that I'm sure our listeners can relate to will include things like noise, crowds, unwanted touch, clothing, particular smells. Even simple self-care tasks like brushing hair or brushing teeth can be really challenging for young people. I suppose school is one that's worth mentioning. It's a big trigger for young people, and it's something that families will talk to us a lot about. And it can encompass a lot of what I've already mentioned here all at once. So as well as those academic demands, there are the social pressures and communicating with peers and teachers to navigate, managing the sensory stimuli in classrooms and corridors, managing last minute changes to the timetable, coping with unstructured times such as break and lunch. So lots happening in a day, and parents and carers may be familiar with that Coke bottle analogy where, you know, the bottle is shaken over and over, and that represents all the little stressors building up in a young person to the point where it's opened and fizzes everywhere. And that's much like the emotionally dysregulated child who explodes at some point in their day or when they get home. And sometimes they will mask it until they're home so that school don't see these issues. And I'm sure there's lots of parents and carers listening that can relate to this and are nodding along at that point. So, I mean, I've mentioned just, you know, a handful of common reasons why a young person might be experiencing times of emotional dysregulation, but it's by no means an exhaustive list, and parents and carers will know the young person best and will be able to identify their own triggers. But yeah, I think it's just helpful to be able to stop and really reflect on how much our young people can experience in a day. And often that's all happening while they aren't even with us. And so why they may then go on to present how they do at home.
Yeah, that's helpful, because I think you're pointing out there are a huge list of different possible reasons why someone with ASD could find things more stressful. And when they add up and when the Coke bottle is shaking, It is difficult, and then it's kind of almost understandable, really, isn't it, that the Coke bottle explodes and that things become overwhelming. Yeah, that's a helpful summary of it. And I'm wondering, Gillian, parents might be thinking, is this always going to be the case? Is my child always going to have this struggle with their emotions? And have we any thoughts on that about, is this something that children will always struggle with throughout their life with their ASD diagnosis?
So as mentioned already, we know that our young people with ASD are at higher risk for experiencing emotional regulation difficulties, and this can manifest into mental health needs of some kind for some young people at some point in life. But it just simply isn't possible to predict, you know, what will be a struggle for young people as they get older, or if they will still struggle as they get older. And it can certainly be that with the right support and application of strategies that work, a young person can learn to manage their emotions very effectively and maintain, you know, good emotional well-being on the whole. It also depends on the stressors that they'll experience at different points in their life. Much like all of us, we all will have times when our mental and emotional health dips in response to certain triggers or life events. And this will be true for young people with ASD too. They may simply have more or different triggers, and that can mean it can require more of a conscious effort to maintain good emotional health and well-being. But certainly that's not to say that all young people with ASD will go on and struggle for the rest of their lives, or will be certain to experience mental health needs of some kind in their future, because that's not true either.
Yeah, and just as we're chatting here, Gillian, I'm thinking about that analogy again of the Coke bottle bursting, and actually thinking that there is a learning opportunity in there for families every time. And it's a description about almost playing detective, about thinking, why has it been so difficult at that moment? Why did it happen then? And that journey of families and young people themselves learning more and more about what are the things that shake the Coke bottle. And as those are better understood by a family, better understood by a young person, better understood by school, then things can be done about it.
Absolutely.
So that the Coke bottle is less shaken, and I'm definitely overusing that analogy now. And I'm wondering then, focusing in on a parent or a carer, and they're listening to this thinking, okay, but what can I do? So what advice would we give them?
I mean, thankfully there's lots that parents and carers can be doing to support their young person with their development of those emotional regulation skills, and to practically help them in those times when they're in that emotionally dysregulated state. First thing that's important to mention is the importance of visual supports within the environment. And I know that this has already been covered in much more detail by my lovely colleague Lois in a separate podcast called Supporting What You Say in a Visual Way. And I would highly recommend parents listen to that, because providing a visually structured environment makes life much more predictable for a young person with ASD, and thus reduces some of the anxiety that can manifest when a young person is attempting to process and understand information. So examples might be use of a daily visual schedule, a weekly calendar, visual aids to break down the steps within a task, inputting reminders into a phone or a tablet, colour coding skill books and folders. All these things take the uncertainty and an element of stress out of a young person's day by presenting information in a format that they can process more easily. So yeah, I would definitely recommend parents or carers have a think about how they can increase or introduce visual supports in a meaningful way to help take away some anxiety and stress around routines for the young person. It's so important for parents and carers to be looking after themselves and ensuring that they can present themselves as emotionally regulated when they're supporting and working through the young person's big feelings. You know, they need to see you staying in control. We often talk about the low arousal approach, or I like to talk about maintaining your outer swan. So you're calm on the surface, but you might well be pedaling hard underneath. And that can be a challenge. So I'm not discrediting that either. That is difficult sometimes in the face of it, but just something I think for parents to reflect on is how are you presenting how you're managing your emotions, and are you modeling emotional regulation for your young person? Some other kind of general tips and considerations when sort of talking with your child or young person about what they're feeling and helping them work through those emotions. I mean, validating their feelings is so important, allowing them to have their feelings so that they can learn that they're capable of dealing with them, letting them know that it's okay to feel the emotion that they're feeling, and giving it a name. Sometimes parents can fear that will make it worse, and the opposite is often true. The young person who hears those words to sort of describe what they're experiencing can be really comforted by that, and someone's acknowledged that inner experience. So yeah, validating feelings is really important, and listening fully. Listening with your full attention, because life is busy, but if a young person is coming to us or talking to us about their feelings, it's really important that they know that you're really listening and you're there to support them to explore their thoughts and feelings and help them come up with solutions.
Yeah, there's a lot in there, Gillian, and maybe pulling out a couple of bits of that. You were describing there about the value in parents describing the emotion that child or young person might be experiencing, and I think that's a really helpful comment. I know from chatting to young people on the autism spectrum, when they're feeling overwhelmed, at times they may not actually be able to describe it. It might be very hard for them to label their own emotions, and then of course someone can come along and go, what's wrong, what are you feeling? Which just makes the whole thing worse. Shakes the Coke bottle, so to speak. But actually then suggesting some emotions that they might be experiencing, not in a very prescriptive this is how you feel way, but trying to put labels and trying to understand could be quite comforting. So I think that really resonates with me, what you said there, and you're also drawing out there at the start of about how the parent reacts, and I'm just thinking as you're talking, because any of us, when we get pushed enough or provoked enough, we can just lose it a bit. That's life. But I'm just thinking how that would make it even harder for the child on the spectrum who's feeling very dysregulated, because all of a sudden their parent has gone from maybe being quite predictable and understandable to, in that moment of losing it, acting in a way they weren't expecting. And we all know that children on the spectrum can find the unexpected very stressful. So straight away, that's made it worse. And then, of course, the young person might find it harder to understand the emotions that the parent is experiencing. So that's an added stress as they're trying to work out, why is my parent just gone ballistic? So
absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot in there for families as they negotiate this together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Definitely.
In terms of then helping a young person, I wonder if we have any advice in here for parents, you know, if they're trying to start to teach their child some skills in this area of how to manage those really stressful times. Have we any advice there, Gillian?
When it comes to teaching emotional regulation skills, we tend to look at it in a kind of hierarchical way. So as we've just touched upon there, the ability to identify and understand your own feelings as they're happening, that self-awareness, what our feelings are, and when we're feeling them, we can't be in charge of them. And then how to accurately read and understand the emotional states of others. So we've touched on that too, that extension from self-awareness to awareness of others, being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes. So it's really important and necessary to develop a young person's skills in these areas before we can begin to expect them to know how to manage their emotions effectively. So lots of ways that parents and carers can be supporting the development of these skills at these stages. If you've got slightly younger children, lots of ways in which to build this into sort of games and activities to develop a sort of awareness and the use of emotions vocabulary and increasing that emotional literacy by using tools like pictures to be labeling and describing the emotional states of others. So for example, using simple emotions pictures to play card games such as Match and Pairs, and you can be practicing the emotional labeling there. Creating a photo book of family members, making different expressions to denote different emotions, that's quite fun for some of the younger children, especially to be able to see and label people that they know. And in doing this emotional labeling, that you can then begin to link emotions with an associated reason or possible reason. Putting emotions words on bits of paper and playing feeling charades is another fun one, where they have to act out the word that they pick. Just trying to find those fun ways to get that practice in around emotional labeling and using those emotions words. Most practically useful, I suppose, is also getting into the habit of a daily check-in of feelings to practice these words. This can be something that you support visually with the use of like a feelings board showing a range of different emotions. I would say get the whole family involved, allow for opportunities for modeling how we express our feelings, providing prompts for the young person to do the same, and it also helps to develop their listening skills and empathy for others. And I would just make that part of normal daily life. I'd get that into the routine and make that a habit. You know, for example, maybe it's around the table at breakfast time that you do your daily feelings check-in, and we all do it together. Parents and carers as well will need to be providing those labels of how their young person is feeling in those real life moments and scenarios too. So, you know, for example, yeah, I can see that you're cross because your brother took the remote from you. Even by modeling how others might be feeling in things like books and TV shows, if that's motivating to the young person. Just anything really to help increase that young person's awareness of and exposure to emotions vocabulary in natural moments, and that can provide a model for how they can use that same language for themselves. As part of increasing emotional literacy as well, it will be important to teach the young person to develop awareness of those signs and symptoms of emotions, you know, listening to the message our bodies give us to let us know that we're feeling a certain way. So the idea being that once we can identify what's going on in our body and understand that this links to our emotional state, then we can learn tools to manage it. So a nice wee helpful activity that you can do to support this learning is by creating a body map for different emotional states. So say, for example, for worry or anger, using a black and white outline of a body as a framework for talking about what it feels like in different parts of our body when we're feeling worried or when we're feeling angry. So for example, when you're angry, your face might feel hot, your heart beats fast. Maybe when you're feeling worried, you know, your mind races, your stomach's in knots or is sore. The young person can label or draw this on their body map. And a fun way I've actually done it before is using a big roll of paper and actually drawing around the child's body and using that as the framework for the activity. And certainly body mapping will be something that will require the adult to be scaffolding the discussion and modeling, giving examples themselves of how the feeling affects them, because this is probably going to be tricky for a young person at first. Once you've completed that, it can be put up somewhere and used as a visual reference from then on for talking about those tricky feelings and how they're being experienced by the young person.
There's a lot in there, Gillian. You're giving us a lot to digest. And I'm just winding back to the early part of your thought there. And I really liked it. And it was saying that, well, the young person, if they don't understand their own emotions or they don't understand the impact it's having on others, how are they going to calm themselves down? So if you're saying to your child, calm down, but they don't even know what's going on and they don't even know how it's affecting everyone else, one can then see why that's going to be a real struggle. That's a really helpful principle, that we've got to get those foundations of helping the young person understand their own emotions first before they can build on the what to do about it, and seeing as well how it affects others. And you're giving us practical tips in there, which I really like. And I'm just thinking as you're talking there about the day-to-day picking up on emotions and commenting on them, whether that's on TV or in a family member or whatever. And maybe parents will think, well, that'll sound really odd to do that. That'll be really weird. And why would I do that? And my thought back, Gillian, I wonder if you would agree, if it's feeling kind of odd, that's okay. Because for neurotypicals, for people not on the spectrum, that would be a bit odd. Say, oh, look, that person's smiling, that tells me this or that. But actually, for young people with ASD, that can be really hard for them to start to learn, and they need taught it. So I don't know, would you agree with that? If they're teaching emotions and it feels really weird, that's okay, and they're probably doing it right.
Yeah, definitely. It's really important those skills are explicitly taught for our kids on the spectrum.
Whereas if families have got other children who aren't on the spectrum, they'll never have had to do this in some sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And just one thing I want to draw out from what you were saying, you were talking about body mapping and scaffolding. And maybe just in case anyone was sort of wondering exactly about that. So body mapping is drawing out the outline and labelling where emotions are felt. And then scaffolding is, do you want to just explain that for anyone in case they didn't follow that bit?
So I suppose that's the parent having to do maybe the bulk of the work initially in these kind of activities, scaffolding those discussions, providing those lead-ins, offering suggestions of how that feels for them, what that's like for them, and sort of offering or putting that out there to see if that's something the young person takes them up on. The act of sort of scaffolding the conversation is so much that it's led by parents, and it's, but hopefully in a natural way where you're not heavily feeding the prompts, but you're having to kind of introduce those language and those concepts, as we say, quite explicitly, and because that's what needs to happen in those early stages.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's helpful. Thanks. So we've been thinking there, Gillian, about emotions and about understanding. We've been thinking about how to develop that learning and labeling emotions. I'm wondering, are there practical strategies for a young person to calm down? Any advice about that?
Firstly, it's worth asking yourself what already works for a young person. What do they find enjoyment in? What brings them calm already? You know, activities such as drawing or reading, playing with Lego, going on the trampoline for a bounce, listening to music, even some time on a tablet or a console are considered helpful strategies to direct your young person to if those are things that they find enjoyable or relaxing. But also maybe you want to consider use of some breathing techniques, which are a helpful tool for regulating breathing and focusing on the here and now. An example, just to give you off the top of my head, would be finger breathing. I quite like that one. It's where you trace around your thumb and your fingers, and as you move up your thumb or up your finger, you breathe in and hold at the top, and then as you go down your thumb or finger, you breathe out. Mindfulness techniques will be helpful to evoke that relaxation response and lower stress. So mindfulness is a technique that does take some practice, but it's worth it if you can get your young person to buy into it and persevere with it. So maybe that might involve listening to visualizations or meditations, and there's loads of lovely wee apps for kids to support this. So I know the Calm or Headspace apps are really good, but you do there's a cost with them. So a nice free one that I often recommend to parents is one called Smiling Mind, where you can select visualizations by age range. So that's quite nice. Other mindfulness techniques include one called Five Senses Reflection. So where you think of a nice happy memory, maybe it might be a holiday or a special trip or time with loved ones, and you close your eyes, try to imagine that you're back there, and focus on thinking of one thing you can see, taste, touch, hear, smell. Muscle relaxation techniques can also be helpful, especially for those young people who are quite tense and agitated, as the focus is on really relaxing those tense parts of the body. So one example would be squeeze and release. So pretend you're holding a lemon in your hand and you're trying to squeeze out the juice. So you're really slowly having to sort of tense and contract your muscles in your hand, and then you drop the lemon. So you relax your hand and you relax all those muscles and focus on how your hand feels when you do that. And you might have to do that several times over. Or there's other sort of muscle relaxation strategies where you focus on different parts of your body in turn, and you focus on squeezing and tensing those muscles and then relaxing them. We mentioned sensory processing difficulties impacting on emotional regulation, and so sensory strategies will be really helpful for lots of young people. Deep pressure activities, they're known to have a calming effect on our central nervous system. Wall push-ups, get feedback into those muscles. But you want to consider your young person's preferences with this. So do they love particular scents? Perhaps they like having something to fiddle with or manipulate in their hands, such as slime or a stress ball or fidget toys. A really nice DIY sensory activity can be making your own calm down glitter jar, which the young person shakes and then they focus on watching the glitter until it's all rested at the bottom, which can be really calming and sort of visually quite appealing. You can find instructions online for making one quite easily. That's quite a nice sweet activity. You might want to consider whether you'd be helpful to physically mark off a space or a corner of the house which is identified as the child's calm zone or relaxation area. And this can give them a really clearly identified space to go to when they would like some time to themselves, or when you need to direct them to engage in some of their calm down activities. So families I know who have created a calm zone in their house have done a fab job of making this space comfy and cozy, and get the beanbags in, soft blankets, fairy lights, favourite things, the works, all in there for the child to enjoy and just to really help create an environment that is conducive to relaxing. Another really practical idea that is that works really well for kids, to consider putting together a calming toolkit for your young person to have access to, as something tangible to engage in when they need to keep their mind and their hands occupied. So you can use a shoebox or a storage box and get your child involved in decorating it and putting items together. And that might be soft toys they love, items such as colouring pens in the book, sensory toys, photos of happy memories, some of their favourite things, wee collections they have, and also even visual prompt cards for breathing techniques could be quite nice to put in there. And then this is something that can stay in the child's calm corner, or I know that some families have multiple calming toolkits, so they've got one for the house, one for the car, one that stays in school, and it can be a really great tool as long as the items are switched up regularly to sort of maintain that sense of novelty. And to touch on the use of visuals again, it may be an idea to create some kind of chill out board or calming menu of options to visually display some of their favorite techniques or go-to strategies, and this can take the pressure off having to think of something off the top of your head. And it could be given to the young person when they're taking some time to themselves. If they're particularly dysregulated and you want to just reduce your language, you're simply sort of giving them their calming board and directing them to their calm zone. Some young people who are really very anxious and tend to worry excessively about things and kind of perseverate on issues might find it helpful if you set up a worry jar box where they write down their worries and put it in the box, and then for them to be addressed at a specified time rather than it be something that takes over their whole day. And you might even need to schedule in specific worry time and worry free time that you have during your day to sort of help a young person who may have difficulty with compartmentalizing their worries or putting things to one side. So yeah, I guess there'll be a bit of trial and error involved with these strategies. You'll know your young person best, what they'll love, what they absolutely won't love. But you can just sort of take from these suggestions what's relevant for you and build on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of practical suggestions in there, Gillian. That's really helpful. I can almost imagine some people might want to pause the podcast and drag it back a little bit and listen to those again and jot some of those down. That was really, really useful. I'm laughing myself a little bit because right near the start you said that, you know, games consoles can be helpful. And if I was a teenager with ASD listening to this, I would then go and get my parent and say, look, they've told me I'm allowed to play my Xbox.
Within limits, of course. Within limits, yes. You know.
That's the caveat, yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of how frequently this is useful and how families would implement this, is this a kind of thing that just people use and do when things get very stressful and dysregulated? Or is this rather something that people build in bit more to routine and almost in a preventative way, that it stops things getting to a more difficult place?
Absolutely. we would always say it's really important to make this be part of their daily routine, build it into the young person's day-to-day life, you know, specific relaxation time that happens every day, and you can use their visual schedule to plan that time in the day where they're going to actively engage in relaxing and practicing strategies together. If you have an older child, that might look like scheduling it on their planner or setting reminders on their phone. And this allows young person to come extra really in those strategies for when they're going to really need them. So it's going to be no use waiting until your young person is extremely dysregulated to try to offer them a calming strategy like I've suggested today. Yeah, it's definitely worth making that part of daily routine, and that does act as a bit of a preventative approach to maintaining emotional regulation, and that's so important for our young people who will often live day to day in a heightened state of anxiety or who are generally over responsive to stress. So I like to say to parents, you know, consider it like you're sort of keeping them topped up in terms of their emotional well-being. And then when you can see that they're becoming dysregulated, this will also be then when you're able to direct them to particular strategies or to engage in relaxation techniques to help them with restoring that sense of calm. But definitely need to be building it in, because it needs to be something that they are explicitly taught and that is practiced with them over and over, time and time again.
Yeah, so that we really are thinking of this as prevention rather than cure.
Mm-hmm,
so this is about, that's really useful.
Yeah.
And just as we move towards finishing off, Gillian, if a parent's listening to this and they're thinking, I'm not getting results from this very quickly, what advice would you give?
Well, I would say firstly to make sure that you really do give things time to be embedded. As I said earlier, emotional regulation skills take time to learn and for learning to be generalised. So there will definitely be rocky days where things just don't seem to be going to plan, but it's really important to keep going and know that you're doing all those right things and that the hard work and that input will definitely pay off eventually.
You've given us a lot of practical ideas there, Gillian, of things we can try. And I'm wondering if someone's listening and they want to read a bit more about this, are there any resources you would point people towards?
Yeah, definitely. There's so much information out there online, especially in these current times and with, well, you know, that growing awareness around children's mental health and well-being. And Autism NI are a great organisation, and they've got lovely resources on their website. They have a nice wee mental health resource booklet. They have an anxiety resource pack for kids and one for teens too. A lovely wee visual video on aids and techniques for managing anxiety. So that's nice to have a look at. The Middletown Centre for Autism has lots of really informative reading for parents. If they want to get more information, access to free webinars at the moment on a range of different topics, but they have got an online resources section. In the emotional regulation section, there's links to some of those visual resources that I've talked about today. The Relax Kids website is also a lovely resource for kids. They've got packs for anger management, anxiety support, developing self-esteem, and we use some of their resources in our emotional regulation groups, so they are really good, and I can and vouch for them.
That's really helpful to have other places people can look. Thanks for that, Gillian. And I suppose just as a final point, if there's a parent listening to this and they're maybe just feeling a bit discouraged and they're maybe feeling like things aren't moving forward and they're feeling stuck, have we any parting thoughts for them?
Yeah, so it's definitely going to be a journey, as we've touched upon already. Developing emotional regulation skills for young people is something that takes time, but keep going with what you're doing. Parents can only do their best, and we only ask that parents just give it their best go. Try strategies as and when they can, and don't give up too soon with things. Really try and persevere through those initial stages that you might not be seeing immediate payoff. And also remember to look after yourself as well. We talked about the need for parents to be emotionally regulated, and that involves self-care for you and taking time for you to restore your own sense of calm and use some of your own calming techniques or some of your young people's calming techniques as well.
Yes, thanks for that, Gillian. Good advice about the importance of keeping going and the importance of parents making some time where they can to refresh themselves as they carry on this journey. Thank you for all those practical tips. Thank you for those thoughts. And thank you to you for listening. And we hope that this podcast has been helpful.